Hody, can you look up some of the libertarian races that we wanted to watch and find out some of those percentages? Because, like, all my equipment's tied up in all this stuff, so I haven't, like Ojeda, that one, the Democrat was supposed to win that one, and the Republican won.
So that one I'll have to re-look at. I actually didn't even have that as a toss-up race.
So, well, what I want to know right now is, like, I heard in a group chat, somebody said that... I knew it was Creighton tapping on that goddamn desk.
He's muted.
I wasn't even doing anything.
You were tapping on something.
I'm not tapping on anything.
Well, then maybe it's your boner or something. But well, here's California. Let's see if Rohrabacher. But I heard Larry Sharp is like doing worse than the Green Party candidate.
Yeah, the Green Party candidate is beating him right now.
What are the totals in that?
It's like 1.5% for the Green and 1% for Sharp.
Man, that's going to be a hard pill to swallow. Oh, that Kaufman race there. Kaufman losing in Colorado. Colorado, that district has Aurora, and it's right next to Columbine. So Kaufman was basically, he lost because he's a pro-NRA Republican, and the Democrat there just basically ran every town. So this Kaufman, this may be interesting to cover tomorrow, Hody. I heard this on 538, I think, or I heard it on some podcast where they were talking about fear-mongering. Uh-huh. They basically, every town, Bloomberg's anti-gun thing, ran ads of a text message exchange between a mother and a daughter in a classroom that's being shot up. And saying, do you want your child to go through this? Then vote for the Democrat that isn't funded by the NRA. So really kind of a despicable ad. But
something that I believe that did happen. So I'm actually from Aurora. I live out here in Utah, but I've actually spent the majority of my life in Aurora. My family's still back in Aurora. Colorado's become bluer than almost any blue state during like my lifetime. I mean, it's one of the bluest states out there. You can project that. I mean, it's right there with like Craig DeCosta's Hawaii, as far as Obama numbers go and everything like that. Now, there's a huge amount of rural area in Colorado, but there's a huge centralized push to get everybody into Denver and Boulder. And I think the Denver city limits are like larger than like any other city. So there's something crazy like that where you're like, oh no, you're still in Denver, even though it takes you an hour to get to the Broncos game, you know? So it's there's some interesting dynamics happening in Colorado, as well as some, I mean, if we're looking at Colorado specifically, something very unique about Colorado is they break a lot of what you would traditionally say, like, so for example, they struggle with like massive amounts of unemployment and they retain their like Governor Hickenlooper like a few years back, and it's Paulus now, but you know, he's a Democrat, so they're going to elect whoever the Democrat is now. And that wasn't always the case. They actually had Ritter, their Governor Ritter, Bill Ritter, who was, if you check Time's like top 10 political scandals, he's on there. He stole money from the schools that was supposed to go to schools. Nice. And they like Coloradans would have voted for him anyway, and they just voted for whoever the next blue guy was. So Colorado's like in a really crazy, they've gone from like middle of the road, you know, we voted for George H.W. Bush once, to, you know, very, very, very blue. And I will say, like, being out there, that's one of those, like, you know, you find areas in the country where if you're in the Ku Klux Klan, somebody might give you, like, a secret handshake and be like, keep up the good work, brother. And you get somewhere you might get shot outside, like, the Denny's, you know. And Colorado's one of those where it's like, if you have your MAGA hat, like, you're in physical danger. And
is it because so many California people have moved there?
So Colorado did something for infrastructure, and I have some, I have two sister-in-laws that are both engineers. One's an architectural engineer, the other's a structural engineer, and they both work like for the government, they work for a contractor through the government. But they get contracted out for so much work. Now, Colorado, during my lifetime while I was there, went from like the state that was like 44th in debt per person to third in debt per person. They spent a huge amount of money to get, they're right behind like Illinois and California or whatever. And I'd have to check Deck Clock. I didn't check it, I think, since I moved a few years ago. But I believe that's still probably the case. They just invested, but they just took debt after debt after debt to keep making jobs artificially, keep doing infrastructure. And so they did make it so that it's a high demand place to live. I have a house out there. You and I talked about this before. The mortgage on it, I mean, the whole reason I live out here in Utah is because it was such a good deal. You know, my mortgage on it's like $500 and my renters pay $2,200 on it. And it's just, I mean, I'm dumb almost not to move and like live meagerly and have those guys cut. I mean, they pay four times what the mortgage was. Right. So the housing market exploded out there. Everybody is moving out there. People want to be out there. Because, and here's what they said, and she's a libertarian as well, my sister-in-law, but she's one of those who said it's kind of one of those, like, stimulus is done right, because they borrowed the money, which happened in California and Illinois, but they actually did build things with it. They actually did build infrastructure with it. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of waste. Of course, there was. Like I said, we had the guy who stole from the schools and everything, there were jobs that came out of it. There is infrastructure out of that borrowing. So Coloradans are actually very happy, even though their misery index is so high. It's still the most fatally drunk place you can get in the country. Like, you're more likely to die because of a drunken accident in Colorado than any other place. They get fatally drunk out there. There's like a lot of indicators that would suggest that they're unhappy, but they are so cool with like what they've done there, and they just want to keep it going. So being from Aurora specifically, my brother was actually in the theater next to that shooting. He thought they were, I didn't even know he was there. So I never had to live through any worry. My mom did. I had no idea he was there that night. He actually was at the theater next door. The emergency exit went through the bottom of his theater. And so people started crawling out. When he heard the gunshots, it was actually during the Dark Knight Rises. Mm-hmm. That scene where they're on the helicopters, and he thought they were trying some kind of like new cutting edge like sound effects thing. Wow. And he was like, that's weird because there's not gunshot during this scene, but those are really realistic gunshots and surround sound and like interesting. And then so his friend that he was sitting with went to the bottom to ask the people, like, what's going on? Like, are you guys, like, actors? Are you guys, like, part of this movie? Like, that are like, ah, run! And then his friend was like, yeah, we got to get out of here right now.
Wow. So, that's yeah. crazy.
Yeah, it's a wild, wild thing. And, you know, gun stuff, you know, they're very anti-gun now. They still embrace some rural stuff. I guess if that can be considered rural, I guess, I mean, some people might consider that urban, but as far as like growing it, I think there's still very like, almost all the Democrats out there is still like a little bit like pro rancher, at least in like their dialect, but they're all very like, let's make this city as big as we can. Denver, like, I think they have four times as many empty apartments as they do homeless population. And it's a disaster of a city, but they keep financing it. And for some reason, Coloradans are just into it. I don't know. I don't know what it is, man. Like I said, it defies everything that you think should happen. You'd think they would be the reddest state after going through this, but they're just not.
I saw it go across the screen, but Rod Blum is down in Iowa, and he's also a liberty-leaning Republican.
Is he for governor?
No, House.
House. Yeah.
Massey got reelected, though, and I'm assuming Amash did, even though I haven't seen his stuff.
Yes, that's the thing. So I switched it, but when you watch the Fox News crawler at the bottom, Michigan was supposed to be one of these places where they're really going to turn blue, and it didn't happen.
I think they really like Amash in his district.
Yeah.
There's
that Kaufman hoodie.
Yeah. And Mike Kaufman was actually a longtime Republican out there. That I guess I'm still not surprised, because like I said, everything's going bluer and bluer. But yeah, he's He's been in politics for a while.
I don't know. I think the biggest takeaway for me is that it wasn't – that it's not – that it falls short of 2010 in the opposite direction. Like,
yeah.
I mean, everyone, I guess, kind of – like, my agent of chaos in me wanted it to just be the Republicans keep control of the House just so that everyone would be like, what the hell is happening?
Right.
I have no idea what's going on. But, like, the fact that it wasn't such a big takeover is actually probably, like, because it's more realistic that it happened this way, obviously, because it's happening. But it does, from, like, the political perspective, like, it really says a lot about what will and won't work. Because House districts, I mean, houses, they always flip. Like, that's the thing. That's the whole point. That's why they're every 2 years, is they're supposed to flip a lot. And, like... after all this, after everything we've heard for the past 2 years, and, like, I mean, it should have been so much bigger than this, and it wasn't. And I don't know, I guess, like, what do the Democrats do? Do they double down on the same stuff that they've been doing?
Which is what they'll do.
Which is probably what they'll do, because they can't help themselves. But, like, that's not going to work. Like, they are lost in the wilderness, man. They really are.
What are they? And I guess you could kind of say this is not dissimilar to the Tea Party in 2010, but, like, with the Tea Party, there was some message of, initially it was, you know, taxed enough already. It was lower taxes. And then, you know, then it became social conservatism. But, are they really offering you? Like, I guess I don't get, like, well, I want Medicare for all. Okay, well, that's not a realistic goal. That's just not something that can happen. Like, there's no way to pay for that. So
they don't care about that. I've actually heard some people are like, you talk about, like, my favorite data point with that is that we already have Medicare for all for old people, and it costs 2/3 of the federal budget. We have Medicare for all, guaranteed basic income for old people, and that's 2/3 of the federal budget right there. That's 2/3 of the federal budget for a minority, like 14% of the country gets all that stuff. And that's 2/3 of the federal budget. And you're like, oh, let's make it for everybody. And they're like, oh, but the cost will even out if it's totally universal. Like, that doesn't, it doesn't make any sense, but they don't care. It has nothing to do with it, especially if you try and tell them, look, if this is going to happen, then you're going to have to pay more taxes. Like, Sweden's bottom tax rate is like 60%. Like, if you want that, but, like, they don't want that. They think that Jeff Bezos can pay for all this by himself, and they don't understand the reality of it. So, right, it is probably not going to happen from that perspective, although, again, I don't make predictions, so, you know, it totally could. But, like, I do think it's one of those things where when people really get face-to-face with, like, the truth of the numbers, then their opinions will probably change a little bit.
I guess I'm an idiot. I didn't realize there was a U.S. Senate special election in Mississippi. And the Republican there is only winning by one. Who is that replacing?
I don't know. I actually didn't know. That wasn't supposed to be close. Whatever it was, wasn't, like, not only wasn't even supposed to be close, like, it was supposed to be like dark red.
Yeah, so it's advancing to a runoff. So there's two Dems, two Republicans, and Chris McDaniel, who I think is a Mike Espy, just clicked over into a 1%. So they're going to have a runoff with that. But I don't realize who was.
I can't believe the Green Party got 1.7% and Larry Sharp's at 1.5%.
I know. That's, gosh, see, that's...
welcome, New York.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of new... see, he brought in a lot of new people. And there's going to be a lot of new people who are feeling what it means to be a libertarian the first time today, which is you do all that work, you get really excited, you think you're going to win, and then you get 1%. I've been there, and it sucks ass, man. It is so defeating, but you just keep stepping back up and getting punished. Thad Cochran, Thad Cochran stepped down. Yeah, he's pretty ill.
I don't know why the Libertarian Party puts any effort on this state or city at all. Like, this, that is not, like, if you can pick or choose your battles, then do not pick this place, because this is the walls of Troy over here, man.
I'll tell you why. I mean, Larry Sharp killed it in the vice presidential debate, and he wants to run for president at some point, and he needed a race that would get him national attention and build him a good base and a good foundation when he wanted to run for president, and I think he did that. So, like, it doesn't matter what his outcome was going to be. He won already. Like, he's the most beloved libertarian person in the party. Like, nobody cares of what Gary Johnson's results are tonight. They care what Larry Sharp's doing. You know, like, I haven't seen anybody in the last few days post anything about Gary Johnson.
But isn't that a problem, though? If you were going to compare two people who had a better chance of actually getting elected, Gary Johnson had a better chance than Larry Sharp did.
Yeah, well, it's all libertarians don't know politics from a hole in the ground, but also there's an enormous problem with Gary Johnson's team. They don't know how to harness the grassroots like Larry Sharp does.
You can say that about every LP candidate ever, though.
I heard his campaign manager was really good.
Yeah, no. No.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm trying to.
Yeah, his campaign manager will tell you how great he is all the time.
Yeah, if it's Ron Nielsen, then it's a hard no. You know, he should have had a much, like, I don't know where Gary's at, but I'm going to tell you whatever it's at, he should have had a much better showing. But I don't think he really was running because he wanted to run. I think he was running because he wanted to help the party out. It was something to do.
You know, it's one of those that these long-term strategies where, you know, and you know, these SARWORK employed strategies where we want as many big candidates on the ballot as possible. Truthfully, we didn't really even give Larry Sharp that much money for advertisement more than anybody else, so it wasn't like it diverted a ton of resources.
Right.
You know, he elected, I mean, I can tell you, being part of his team, we weren't running, like, we weren't even looking at national ads. He's like, you know, these networks, even if we get the money together, aren't going to run them. So they're going to run them at the times we want to. So they just were like, you know, he was just like, let's go social media. Let's drive. Let's get in cars. You know, I'll take that money in gasoline, you know, so I can move and drive. And I mean, obviously it looks like we could have done a better showing, maybe afforded one or two national advertisements, but you know, it, like, he was fine with taking the same amount of money as, you know, Lord over in, North Dakota or wherever. Yeah, you know.
Well, libertarians need to learn the Austin Peterson lesson. Oh, God. Ugh.
I hate her.
It's that new improved Joker smile. Here's the podium, ma'am. Let me...
How are you feeling?
Did you see that $200,000?
Don't do this to me, man. That's your value up on her.
Here.
Nancy Pelosi is the spooky skeleton.
She doesn't even have to be in her district.
Thank you all very much.
Of course she doesn't have to be in her district. She doesn't have to do anything ever again. She'll get reelected until she dies. She'll retire and get reelected.
Elizabeth Warren with the biggest, like, political gaffe of my lifetime, and she still gets reelected.
Salute the chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Aren't we proud of Ben Ray Luke? Ben Ray Luke. I want to acknowledge my two grandsons.
No, but to the libertarian point, why isn't there a push on the national arm to just focus zero on any kind of, like, federal level race and just target exceedingly low-hanging fruit local races across the country with all this national money and take those over?
Well, they do both, but the problem is nobody gives a shit about winning a township race. Like,
right, no one cares as far as in politics, but the thing is, like, if you can say that you've been elected as a libertarian, that goes a lot further than saying, why don't you make me the first one to be elected as a libertarian?
Yeah, the other problem is, you know, look at Ed Coleman. You know, here's a sitting city county councilor. We pumped $75,000 nationally into it, which is really a lot at the time. And it didn't do a damn thing because there were external factors that we
but
didn't.
It's not, but that's what I'm saying. It's not wasn't really a low-hanging fruit. Yeah, he flipped while he was already elected, but, like, straight ticket voting and
him being a jackass, yes.
Like, libertarians, I don't think, are ever going to do well in places that lean blue, like, ever. And Indianapolis, and I don't know exactly what his specific city, county, council district was and whether or not it was red or blue usually or whatever, but, like...
I would disagree.
I just don't think... I mean, we had a Topeka city, county councilor. I just don't think that any kind of low-hanging fruit race is something that's going to get national attention, that somebody's going to go, oh, look. And so somebody like Larry Sharp...
Not one. One won't. For sure, one won't.
Yeah, we have 200 elected right now. Not doing anything.
The issue is, though, is Larry Sharp does so much more good, even if he gets 1%. Larry Sharp going on Glenn Beck three times, going on, I think he was on Ben Shapiro's Sunday special, or maybe I'm confusing that with another Glenn Beck podcast. He was on Joe Rogan, he was on CNN, and he was on a ton of stuff. And that raises the profile so much more than winning a city county council seat, or we don't have the amount of money to win a United States House seat, or you understand the, as well as anybody working for y'all and, you know, working in these House races, like, you understand the systemic problems that there are in trying to win a House race, you know.
Right. Like, that's what I'm saying. You know, if you have a limited supply of funds, don't focus on races that are the most expensive in the history of America.
I don't think that it ever shakes out. Like, there's no central planning to it, and that's part of it, is that there's no, you don't know in the Libertarian Party who your great candidates are going to be. You know, and so Larry Sharp can say, I'm going to run for Senate or governor, or, you know, and that can be exciting for libertarians, but I don't know. This is just one of those things where it's like, if you were the executive director of the National Party, you'd hear that criticism and there wouldn't be much that you could do about it because of 100 different factors that mean that you couldn't pool that much money. You can't, because the amount of money, so there's $435 million spent on third party candidates this cycle. There's no person directing that money like there is with Soros or Steyer or the Koch brothers on the libertarian scene. If you get a meeting with Chris Roofer, who is the libertarian Koch brother, you may get a $50,000 check, or you may get a $5,000 check, but that's still not going to be enough. It's not going to be a $10 million check, which is what you'd really need to build enough name ID to even make a dent in a House race. So the problem is that there's such a systemic, if money just is not raised in general, let alone in the Libertarian Party, where you could centralize all those resources and direct them at one thing.
That's fair. And maybe it's more of a, the thing is, the LP is small enough that everyone kind of knows everybody, that, like, I feel like you could put, I don't know, as far as a long-term strategy, in my view, I think that getting things on a more local level to a significant extent, like, to the point where it does become something that people are talking about, like, oh, yeah, Republicans, Democrats, still the national parties, but there's this third party that has a lot of city seats, a lot of county seats, all across the country, in a ton of states and a ton of districts that are red or blue or whatever. Like, yeah, it doesn't happen fast. You know, it'd take decades, but that's really what you're looking at. Like, I don't think you're ever going to get to a point where, like, what is the strategy now? Get somebody who's popular enough to get enough of the presidential vote to be qualified for public funds or something? Like, Like that doesn't seem like a long-term strategy to me. Like if you're going to be serious about trying to make the Libertarian Party a party that governs, then you need to get people more than 200, which is fine. But like, you need to get there are far more than 200 seats on local levels. And I mean, not just like dog catcher, but like city, county. I mean, and there's got to be low hanging fruit out there for you to get enough people out there to actually make people have a conversation, because they're working with these Democrats and Republicans. And, you know, like maybe there's some sort of critical mass or something, but like, to me, that seems like a better long-term strategy for growth than trying to get the next celebrity guy to
the issue is that you have so few libertarians, like, you know, having trained all these students, like the kids that came out of what you guys were doing at Y'all and what Cliff Maloney's doing, they're creating activists who actually understand politics and know how it will work. I never worked with anybody in the local Libertarian Party in the decade that I was really working hard with the party. I never really met anybody who understood how politics works, except Evan McMahon, and it's because he switched parties too. You know, there's just very few people who are in the Libertarian Party who are in a leadership level who understand that you have to go knock on doors, that you have to do these things. They think if I throw throw $500 worth of radio ads up at the end of this race, then I'm a shoo-in to win. And it's like, no, that's not even going to make even a remote dent in this.
That rarely does make dents ever for anybody.
Right. And so, you know, you have to do what Jeremiah did, which is be a member of the community for a long time, be a prominent voice in the community, serve on, you know, some park board. You have to then knock on every door. Then you have to send a mailer, do a radio ad, get billboards, get yard signs. You know, the amount of work that takes is not something that a lot of libertarians actually want to do, because they really, I don't think many people do. I don't think people in the Republican and Democratic Party necessarily want to do that stuff, but they do it because there's power behind it, or there's money to be made by being one of those people knocking on doors and being the strategist. So the problem with the growth, the long-term growth of the Libertarian Party is really systemic, and it starts with people actually first embracing politics and how it works, and second executing it and over and over and over until they've perfected it, and then teaching a bunch of other people how to do it. And I just don't see a lot of temperament. So I hear what you're saying, and I think you're exactly right. It's just not how it works. It's not how the party is made up. The party is made up of people who were sitting on a night like this, watching their TV going, something is not right. I need to make a difference. How do I do it? They listen to a podcast or they watch a YouTube video. Then they contact the local party. They go hang out at meetings. They do stuff like that, you know, but there's never really like hardcore grassroots education and then multiple applications of it. Because if you're a Republican and you're 18 and you want to go out and you want to learn how to do politics, well, you got like 10 different opportunities a year. You could work on 5 different campaigns. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, those 10,000 hours really do matter. Like, working with Americans for Prosperity or Young Americans for Liberty, you're going to get those reps. And you may be flown to different locations, but you're going to get those reps. And local people on the ground in their local community at the Libertarian Party level don't get those reps unless they live in a place like Henry County, where you've got Rex Bell and then Jeremiah carrying on the torch and repeated multiple cycles where the same people are doing politics. So if you want the Libertarian Party to grow, yeah, you're right. You've got to have the Danny Lundys of the world going out, knocking on doors, doing politics the way they're supposed to do it. And he got a 17% result in a 4-way race. That's huge. It's not a win, but it's a really good base. It's enough. It's 1,300 people. He now has a constituency. And if he does it about 3 more times, he's going to win, you know. But how do you say to somebody, I need you to do this again 2 more times for the next decade, and you're probably going to lose, and then you might win on the 4th time, you know. So it's just a really hard sell. You have to be really committed to it.
Right. And I agree completely. And that's why I think finding somewhere where you can actually start winning and not be like, oh, we did well this time. We got 2%, you know, like that's, to me, that's a harder sell. Like to try and tell people, like you just said, like, you know, you try and say, hey, we did actually really good. We got third instead of fourth, you know, like those are the kinds of things that do turn people off. But if you can find a way, and I'm not necessarily saying I know, because I don't know every single local, but I'm just saying, like, if you can find places where people can come in from the beginning as Libertarian Party guys, they win a race, maybe they win re-election for that race. You do that at numerous places. You don't just have people flip over while they're already elected, which I think is what Ed Coleman did. Like, you know, those are, I think, significant points where you'd be like, look, you know, it's starting small, but we've got people who are, you know, part of our party and they're winning. You know, it's not as sexy as the House. It's not as sexy as a governorship. It's not as sexy as, you know, as a mayor. But like,
right.
We have people who are elected representatives from our party all over the country and all of these places. You know, you just have to, honestly, it's just going to have to, you have to be on the ground and you have to know where those low hanging fruit are at. And like I said, obviously New York isn't a low hanging fruit, and maybe he's getting good name recognition and whatever happens. But like, for me, like I'm looking at this from the perspective of, I want people who have these ideas to actually be in office. Like,
yeah. Well, you have to have, there's two levels to it. You know, so look at Indiana as the model, because that's what we're familiar with. You have to run somebody for Senate, and you have to run somebody for governor. And the reason is because they get to be in the televised debates. And you know that Lucy Brenton is not going to be, Lucy's not going to win. But Lucy is a very important race because it's a marketing race. And so it's that person that, it's that
ballot access.
It's ballot access with Mark. Yeah. So you have the marketing race, and then you have the race where you're really trying to get people, you know, you pump some resources into the marketing race, because if somebody calls your office and wants a yard sign for your Senate candidate and you don't have it, you look like an idiot. You look small time. So you got to have some resources, but you know, Rex Bell and Henry County, and that's where we put the resources. You know, that's where we ran people. Mark Rutherford went and, you know, campaigned in Montgomery County, because that's where we have our highest vote totals for whatever reason. You know, but Rex Bell, when he ran for U.S. House, he was winning precincts. Like, show me another person who was running for U.S. Congress and winning precincts. And that's not that may not mean anything to anybody, but it means something to me, because it tells me that, okay, here's the model. And so you have somebody like
people in an area.
Right. So you have somebody like Rex, who has been sort of he does a bunch of writing for the local newspaper, very personable, a respected member of the community. He runs for the same race a couple of times. Then he's like, I'm going to move up a little bit. And, you know, and then he's built a base of people, and he's built a county party that is lasting beyond his time. It spread over into Henry County and Randolph County and Union County and Wayne County. And so you now have an organization where you're building on what he did. Jeremiah, the Boss Hog guys, so, you know, that's part of what the Boss Hog of Liberty is about. It's about building on what Rex did by kind of, you know, Rex wrote for the newspaper because Rex's generation read the newspaper. Well, okay, let's do a video podcast. Let's do a podcast. And I'll be really interested to see Jeremiah's results, because he has a real shot at winning. And so you have to have your marketing races. And yeah, you have to put some resources into it, but those races are important. Larry Sharp is really important to the health of the party, because he gives those new Gary Johnson voters somebody to work, somebody to believe in. They may not have anybody in their local area, you know, and they're watching the campaign and they go, okay, this is how politics is done. You know, so those marketing opportunities are really important. But yeah, the real resources ought to be put in the Jeremiah Morrill, in the county council districts. You know, Jeremiah wins county council. He serves in county council for a couple of terms. And then he runs for State House, and he wins for State House. You know, so, oh, Rick Scott, I think, is accepting.
And I also hate to burst your other bubble, but I guess, Chris, you just said that Jeremiah finished in third with 12% and Keenan Gray won.
Oh, that's a ball buster. That sucks.
It looks like our at least one of the libertarians in New Hampshire was very sorely beaten.
So Jeremiah, 2,100, 1,400, and 490.
I think it's funny that like our best, like we could pour infinite amounts of money into it, but currently our best candidate in the nation tonight has been Lucy, and that's because of a dumb Trump tweet. Like, stupidest.
Yeah, I mean,
doesn't matter how hard we try.
Well, I don't think it
really can't be understated, though, because so much of the party resources in most states just have to go every single year to petitioning and everything that, like, all of this volunteer energy and all of this money could go into good local campaigns, even, but it has to go to just being able to get on the ballot as your party. Because otherwise, you end up having to get, you know, you can, in some states, Tennessee is a perfect example. They're doing a thing where they're like flooding the governor's race because it's easier to get on the ballot as an independent than it is to get on the ballot as a libertarian.
Thousands of people were inspired by Larry Sharpe's campaign, and 10% of those, let's say 10% are going to actually get motivated, actually contact the party, and 1% of those are actually going to do something. But that could lead to real results, you know? And so you could end up with 500 Jeremiah Morals out of the Larry Sharpe campaign, and that's what you want. You want, and it also helps identify, you know, the Lauras, the party leaders. So these races are really important, even if they get 1%, and it seems like they're wasting a lot of money. You know, so there are benefits to it in growing the party in other areas.
And I don't think you can say that Lucy won just because of Trump. She put a lot of work and effort in and won several debates that she was in. I think being in the debate helped her a lot. But she was pulling 4% in every county. Every time the results would come in, it wasn't like she had a drop and then come back up and drop came back. She hovered at 4% throughout the entire state, which is, in my opinion, pretty amazing.
So what would you say the difference was between like a Lucy who actually pulled down the 4% and a Sharp who was pulling the 4, 5, 6% and didn't pull it down?
Well, I think part of it is that New York is a different animal than Indiana. It's very, yeah.
I mean, every year, you know, the Republican, the Libertarian presidential candidate's polling at 10%.
Yeah, the only poll that matters is the actual count of the votes.
Yeah, but like, I'm just saying, like, what's the difference between like a Lucy, who that number is actually factually happens?
Okay, we lost all of our state level elected representatives.
Who, where, what, how, who, what?
All of our elected libertarians in New Hampshire were defeated.
Yeah, but...
No, that's not good.
Free state.
I'm checking Nebraska right now.
Do y'all have, like, people who actually, like, do consistent canvassing and ground game... number crunching, figuring out who's unsavable, who in the middle, who's convincible, like
the problem is we can't pay anybody to do that. So we've got volunteers who can, but they can do it on volunteer time.
Right, but that's common amongst all campaigns, though, is that you want to like
no the that's kind of one of the big problems is that at least the old parties, they have some basic form of infrastructure. They have people at the party level who are able to do those and get the basic figures to you. Yes, you know, there is a lot of volunteer work with the day in and day out, you know, campaigning, but when it comes to like identifying races that you should put donors towards and actually are trying to gain for political advantage, generally there's people who that's their job.
Right. There are people who are hired to do those kinds of things, but I know in my experience, like, I've canvassed for people just because I drove up there and canvassed for them, you know, like,
yeah,
like, but I canvassed for them because I like them, obviously. I wouldn't go up.
Well, yeah, but that's the just day-to-day campaigning. That's not identifying winnable races.
I'm talking about going and figuring out, it was for a campaign, but it was far enough in advance where it's like, we're just trying to figure out who we should even talk to. Like, trying to figure out who we should actually focus our energy on. And you can only do that by getting an actual map of people's sentiment in your entire universe of people who are going to vote for you. And, right, Republicans and Democrats have a bit of an infrastructure set up. They say, all right, this is what we had last time. And, you know, these guys died or something. Or these guys were on the margin last time. Let's see if they've ever, you know. But, like, you know, if you don't have, and this isn't just your state, I'm talking about in general amongst the Libertarian Party, like, is there a significant effort to actually, like, do the very not fun but so important work of just kind of getting a picture painted of the actual layout of people in your area? Because, yeah. I mean, okay, like...
No, we actually, at least in our era, we had one campaign who he ran full out. He got everything he should. He canvassed his entire district, and it looks like he's about to get 3%.
Right. See, the problem, there's several problems that are here. So until you can prove to people that your vote's not a wasted vote or there's a reason to vote for that person, they're always going to go, yeah, I'd really love to vote for you, but I got to make sure there's other
little forms of proof that allow people to make that jump. Are the things that we can't control. It's things that we bitch about all the time, like debates, like a little bit of media coverage.
Right.
You know, but if somebody bothers to ask you questions about what you stand for.
But the other thing, too, is that right now we're becoming so polarized that issues don't hardly even matter anymore. And I think Trump, the Trump tamping down of the blue wave also hurt libertarian wave, as it were. Because people are like, I don't care. I got Trump to go vote for.
As a party, there's so many systemic problems that have to be fixed at the legislative level, at the legal level, that really, before you can start talking about, I just see a lot of the same sort of hopeful dreaming statements every single year. And like, I just saw it again in one of our chats. It's like, well, Lucy may not have won, but cost per voter, she did really well. It's like,
but here's
shit about how much money you spent. You know, it's like, did you win or not? That's what people care about. And if you want to win, you've got to start lobbying state legislatures to gerrymander favorably, get rid of straight ticket voting, do things that are fair and equitable to anybody that isn't part of the establishment.
But what I want to say is that we don't realize how much power that the, okay, so you could say that the Libertarian Party is not doing what it should be doing, but it's been growing, you know, for decades, and you say it's going to take decades to do this. Well, that's what we've been doing for decades. We've been focusing on making sure that we got people elected all across the country in as many races as we can. We've growing. We're the only party that can be on all 50 ballots. We're, you know, the only legitimate third party. No other party's been able to do any better, and most of them do far, far, far worse than we do. So we're obviously doing something right, but the problem is a lot of libertarians want to win without realizing that they still have a lot of power within this country that they're not tapping into and understanding that they have. Right. So how many elections or how many of these races are so close and neither candidate got over 50% and the split is covered by the libertarian. So all the other parties have to do is start realizing they need to court the libertarians or at least address the issues that were gets concerned about and to get some of those votes.
You know, we can joke about it a lot.
But that gay
marriage and canvas used to be really problematic issues.
But that also brings up another point, is does the LP have issues that are specifically considered like LP issues, or is it just the generic libertarian issue? Like, historically, third parties have been single issue parties, and those single issues who's end up getting subsumed into one of the major parties, and then you get something like prohibition or something like, or that, women's suffrage.
Like, Libertarian Party is a philosophy that spans a lot of different issues.
I absolutely understand that. And that's not, I'm not saying that, like, I disagree with any of the philosophy. What I'm trying to say is that it's hard to try and say we need to court libertarian issues if they're a wide swath of them. Historically, third parties had been focused on one issue, and when that specific issue catalyzed enough people to get behind it, one of the major parties would be like, oh, this is an actual significant issue we need to take into account. And then the party got,
Look at gay marriage, look at marijuana legalization. Those are all things that we've been fighting for years.
Right, but so have Democrats, though.
It looks like Laura actually lost.
Who lost?
Laura.
Laura Ebke, the Nebraska senator.
Okay.
So we have no more state level elected officials now. Everyone who defected Libertarian lost.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. Which is fairly common because
it's a bad sign.
Yeah, well, but it's just
you're trying to sell a message and you can't sell it when you know that happens.
People will always still try to do it. I mean, that's just how it is because either they're very principled or they're very egotistical. You know, I think Laura was very principled, and Ed Coleman was very egotistical. You know, and so it's always going to happen, and they always almost lose because what we learned with Ed Coleman when he switched here as you know the 12th largest city county council, we heard a lot of I feel betrayed by him. I voted for him one way, and then he changed his mind. You know, so there is. That's a very strong sentiment sometimes when people switch. It's just the reality of it.
Right. So, but the other one thing I need to say too is before I'm going to have to get off here soon, but
yeah, I'm going to jump off too here in just a few.
But the real issue is going to have to be that we need to really make people understand the difference between libertarians and the other two parties and figure out a messaging that's going to get them involved and start understanding we're going to have to hire or work with people to help build the party a little stronger who understand politics. We can't keep putting people into positions inside the party because they say they're going to go out and sound like Ron Paul and do what Ron Paul did. Well, that was a whole different thing. That's not, we need people who understand politics and they're doing that sort of work. And
I've been saying that since I got involved.
Yeah, we have a history of just popularity contests. Libertarians understand this, so the core of the party doesn't understand politics. And that ends up, and the people who do understand politics try to tell them what they should be doing are the ones that get slapped down and told to go away. You know, so you get frustrated in that area.
What was it? A couple of conventions ago, where guy gets up on stage with his shirt off, like.
Understand the optics.
It may be an unfair criticism, but at the same time, it's not. It's like it's sort of indicative of the separation between the people. It's more to me, from my experience outside of Indiana, but like in with LP people outside of Indiana, it's more of a club mentality. It's an exclusive club mentality kind of thing. It's like, oh, we're not Republicans, Democrats. We're cool, you know. We're the outsiders, you know. And it's like, and in that sense, growth and success are almost anymore to their entire personality as to why they're even involved in the first place.
Okay, Christy Avery just walked in my house. Run! What are you doing? No, get away from me! You're an intruder. I have a caravan of super fans.
He's being videotaped. Now's not a good time to rape him, Christy.
Did you hear him? Thanks for the advice. I'll wait until later. All right. Well, should I keep the stream going or should I shut it off?
No, I'm out of here, bro.
Nope. Keep it going until the sun comes up.
I'm just going to end it. You all need to go to bed.
No.
Stone, you have a curfew. Go to bed.
I don't have a curfew.
All right, guys. This was fun. I'll talk to y'all later.
Peace.
All right. Thanks a lot.
No, please. All right. I should leave the stream going.